Hello and welcome back to the Unending TBR podcast. I'm your host, Nicole. Today I have a very special guest speaker and I look forward to letting you finally hear this episode.
So I am here today with the wonderful Natalie Walters.
Hi.
Thank you for joining me. And I invited you over to discuss villains.
Yes. the deliciously bad characters that
I know. You're a romantic suspense author. So villains are definitely a part of that. So now I have to ask, do you like a morally gray villain or pure evil?
Oh gosh, I think it really depends on the story plot line. So on my second book, Deadly Deceit, I think my character was morally deprived. He was just not a good character. And then I think in my first book, the villain in that one was just evil. There was not really an explanation. There was nothing that really caused that. It was just pure evil. So, and I think that's the case. And I'm writing a new series now, and I'm trying to think of my first book in that series. I feel like the character is probably like a toss up in between of the two characters. So, I mean, I like the morally deprived, because I feel like it's easier for someone to relate to a morally deprived character because they kind of explain their process, like their thought process on like, this is why I'm this way. Where somebody is just like plain evil, it may be like opportunistic in their crime. That's really hard to like swallow, because you're like, what? Like, there's no way to explain it. It's just simply they're a terrible person. They just, you know, are a killer or whatever. So I like the idea of like a morally deprived, because then you can kind of get into the psychological mindset of the character. And that's always fun. A little bit creepy, but also fun.
Yeah. And it's interesting. It's what makes like a good bad guy, what to get inside that head to find out what makes them tick. I mean, I bet you that's probably a real a brain exercise to try and think up what motivates these people.
Yeah, for sure. And I think a lot of it, I did a podcast where I talked about how I like writing the villain's perspective, because you kind of can like put your mind in that position and say, like, okay, what would cause me to do X, Y, and Z? And why would I feel like it's okay? For the most part, I feel like villains, they think that they're doing that they're not doing anything wrong. Like, they don't see any objection to their actions. And so they'll continue to, you know, if it's a serial killer, there's a reason behind that. But I think it's interesting, because I've been kind of addicted lately to the Oxygen Channel and ID. And they've got all these like 48 hours and like the murder mystery stuff. And it's been really interesting as they're breaking down these like actual cases, and they're interviewing the suspect and learning what their what their reasoning, and you know, so much of it is greed and affair. So like, you have kind of this idea of like, okay, it's going to be a money thing a lot of times. It's going to be a love triangle. It's going to be a power struggle. So you kind of have those things to like get you started on like why someone would do something. So I think that's the best part about kind of, you can kind of make them whatever you want them to be, because they're the bad guys. So you can make them as terrible or as, you know, I would say like psychologically twisted, and like you wouldn't suspect that it's that person. And then they turn up being, which I think are the scariest people. I think the killers that are the ones that are the scariest to me are the ones who just snap. So like cases where it's like a husband that just decides to kill his wife, or kids that just decide to kill their parents, I'm like, that is so scary to me.
That is so scary. And I did hear on, I think it was Shatona Havig that I heard on her podcast, she was saying it's like some of the scary, I think it was hers that some of the scariest villains are the ones that are the heroes in their own mind or the heroes of their own story. And it's like when they see that as they believe even in a little bit in their cause, to me that is like it's even scarier than somebody who's just unstable. It's like they're calm enough and in control enough. My brother and I had this conversation on a long car ride and we're like, okay, what is the scariest villain that you can think of? And to me, I thought of that. I don't know if you saw it, but it was based on a true story. Dirty John. Dirty John was I can't remember how many episodes. I think it was like,
was it the guy who like was gaslighting his wife?
Yes.
So it was Christian Slater who played the main character?
I don't know actors' names.
Okay, but, so I feel like I saw something. I want to say it was Dirty Harry, but it was like the guy he was gaslighting his wife and she ended up believing she was crazy and then like killed him and his.
Oh, that's a different one.
Okay, so there's many different Dirty Harrys.
This was Dirty John.
Oh, Dirty John, sorry.
And it was the one that was like, a super, like you would never guess to him to be a killer. And those to me are the scary ones because it's like there were little things and she meets him and marries him like really quick. And then there's like these little nuggets, little red flags that come up. And then and by the end, you realize how much he has manipulated the whole situation. And it was just those are the ones that are definitely... Yeah. Because they could be anyone. They don't look like a monster walking down the street.
Right, right. I know, I think I saw something somewhere floating around on like the internet and it was saying like, in your lifetime, you'll have bumped into a serial killer like X amount of times in your life. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that is horrifying.
It's horrifying, but I feel like also, like I watched crime shows from my like late teen years on. And I feel like it made me very aware. I mean, I didn't do ridiculous things because it's like, they could be anywhere.
Yes. My children, I have all adult children now, and they will tell you that they have suffered greatly because of the shows that I've watched and the stories that play out in my head when I'm writing characters. You know, I'm like, I shared something on my social media the other day and it was like, you know, one of the things that when my kids are introducing me to somebody that I don't know, my first thought is like, they could be a serial killer. Like they could be somebody who's gonna kill my kid, take them out. Like, so that's my thought process. Or I'll tell my kids, like, we lived in Egypt for a while. And I said, you know, like if you go to a party and they kidnap you, like you're gone forever. Like you'll be sold into sex slavery. Like you're gonna be you'll be wives to many men. So like, I like am always thinking of like these like scenarios. In fact, I mean, it could be something like I'm walking, like if I go to the hospital here to work or whatever, I'll take the stairs. And my first thought always inside of a stairwell is like, this is where people are killed. Like, this is where you'd get killed. This is where you'd get kidnapped in a stairwell.
It's always the stairwell.
Yes, always the stairwell. And I will tell you, watching these crime shows, it's so funny because I'm like, all right, what I'm learning is that if somebody like kills themselves to double check because they probably were murdered. And if somebody's like spouse kills the other, always check the insurance policy because they probably upped it just before the death. So like there's all these little things that are like these nuances. You would think that like in our current day and age, like the killers would understand like these things are obvious, like little, you know, clues that you're probably gonna get caught. So be more creative, I suppose. I'm probably like, this will probably be bad. Someone will send me a message like, did you just tell serial killers to be more creative? I'm gonna get
Like investigation discovery in a lot of those cases, there aren't a lot of like serial killers on those. Found it's like we were watching, like my mom and I were like binge watching the See No Evil, and those were like usually like the crime of opportunities and stuff like that. So like it's definitely, you definitely have so much more. So you have security cameras and there's just so much more each time there's all this tracking information, and it's like, yeah,
definitely. Yeah, I don't think people, it's just interesting because you think like, you know, I'm watching, there's like obviously those people who are like the premeditated ones, and then the mm-hmm. ones that are, you know, like, okay, it's just an opportunity or whatever. But it's interesting because I have watched some on Investigation Channel that it's, I'm like, I don't know if they did it. Like, they get convicted, but I'm yeah. like, I have my doubts. I'm like, I don't know if I was on that jury, I don't think I could have like said guilty, because I don't think that he did it. I think this other person did it, you know? So I'm trying to figure out clues. But that's really helpful for me as a writer, because those are the red mm-hmm. herrings that we like to throw into novels to say like, okay, if it confused me, that's a good way to confuse a reader as well. And so that's yeah. kind of the fun game we get to play when we're creating the plot lines.
Yes. So what are your thoughts on like in a book, having the villain's point of view? Do you like that?
So I have a few thoughts. When I first wrote my first book, I didn't want to do my villain's perspective because I felt like it would give too much away. And then my agent was like, oh, you might want to do your villain's perspective, because then you put you're putting the reader into the mindset of them, and it builds up more suspense, because now the reader kind of knows like, this is what's going to happen. It increases mm-hmm. the tension with the main characters. So I think it's like, for me, a hit and miss. If it's done well, I enjoy it. So one of, I think we talked about, like, we were going to talk about like our top like favorite villains. Yes. And yeah. so one of the ones that I selected was a character, the villain, you have their perspective in, I think it's like the opening chapter. It's like one of the first scenes in the opening chapter, you're in the villain's perspective, and it's so creepy. And I think like that works really well when it's kind of a truly evil villain. I think it's good to be in their perspective, because you're like, oh, this is like, you're seeing their evil like manifest. I think when it's somebody kind of like what we were talking about, those bad guys that we don't know, like we're not expecting, I yeah. prefer to stay out of their perspective yeah. because it kind of throws, you know, kind of reveals kind of their reasoning behind it. And it's yeah. those kind of characters, and even those people in real life, never to me really feel like that's a good enough reason to kill somebody. So like,
right.
you know, you watch it and you're like, okay, well, they had an affair and then he wanted to get rid of her. And I'm like, well, that like, that's stupid. Just leave the couple or whatever. But so yeah. those ones are not, I don't think I want to be in their perspective as much. Although I do like sometimes the way that they are evil, and I like that to come out, you know, in the end, but through a different perspective.
Okay. So what is one of your first? What is that first?
So one of my ones, it's Nancy Mell's Mind Game. And that one, it's part of a three-part series, not a trilogy, but it's a three-book series. And it's Kaylee Quinn series. And she is works for the FBI. She's like behavioralist studies. And so it's starts with her perspective and then goes three books, and each book has a different villain. And that mm-hmm. one is the first villain in her first book, and deliciously creepy. I think the part that made it really creepy, and this won't give anything away, but the character sends, the villain sends her a like a rhyme, like a riddle. And it's kind of like the 10 little Indians, but it's like 10 little elephants or something like that. And so it's really creepy because it has each of the elephants, or each of the like little stanzas in the crime, or each of the stanzas in the rhyme describe what the crime is going to be. So she has to try to get there first, or stop it, or discover who it is. So it was really good, because you're like, you know, when you hear it, you're kind of like, oh, it just gives you kind of chills, because you're like, oh my gosh, this is going to be so bad. But she did a good job with that. I really like that one.
I have yet to read that one. I think I've read some of Nancy Mell's earlier ones, but I have not read that one yet. So that's definitely.
Yeah, it's probably one of my favorite series. I would say it's probably like one of the top favorite reads of 2020. So I really enjoyed it. She's got a new one coming out pretty soon that looks really good as well. And I think it continues with the FBI series. I can't be for sure on that though, so.
speaking of like villains that leave a little bit, and I feel like he was this one was definitely very evil. I think you do get a little bit of her perspective, and that was the I do not remember his real name, but he refers to himself as the illusionist in The Pawn by Stephen James.
Oh gosh, Stephen James is one of those authors, like it takes a lot of gumption for me to like be able to open his books up and read them, because they terrify me. Like his description, I'm like, how is like it's just so detailed and so gory. Yeah. Like, I think I started, what is it, The Pawn is the first one, right? In the chess series. And I like got like a chapter in, and I was like, okay, I got to put it down. Like, I can't read it. I have to be in a very specific mood. Yeah. You know, my husband's in the military, so he's deployed. And I was like, I can't not have him home. Like, I have to turn the lights on. Like, usually I'll read a chapter and then I have to watch like some sort of lighthearted show. So like I'll watch an episode of The Office, or I'll watch like Wipeout, something that like just makes everything lighter.
And I remember like being obsessed with, like, I read The Pawn and The Rook really close, and then it was like, and then I couldn't even get into The Knight, and I had to wait. I waited like more than five years I think before then I continued the series. I just finished, I made myself finish King.
Oh my god.
It was one of those,
like, he's a crazy writer.
Yeah. It was like, what I loved in with The Pawn, though, what like really hooked me was that whole thing of a very intelligent villain that was always that one step ahead. Mm-hmm. And I loved how stuff was explained from like the different methods of how they use the geographic profiling and stuff like that, and how useful that is. I love the things that I learn through that. But it was like how in The Illusionist, he would have something for his future victim left with his previous victim. So then it was like it built that anticipation that you were just like waiting for the next thing to happen. And it's like, I almost have to read it like really, really fast and not pay attention too much to the details, because
right just plays over those little
really fast, especially with the King. I was just like flipping through it, and it's like, and then I'm done.
It's hard. Like those, I had to stop. Like, I used to watch Law and Order and CSI and all those things. I've gotten to a point now where I can watch the shows, but I think I can watch these over the other ones, because the other ones, they would leave me feeling very unsettled. So like 2020 and Dateline, if they don't have like a victim, or they don't have the suspect, and it's the suspect's not arrested, like I feel very unsettled about that. And I've just got to the point, like, especially with like investigation, like at least they've got the, like, we know that the ending, like we know that there's an ending to it, like the guy is caught. So that's always hard. So I really appreciate when authors wrap up the story and they have like the villain, whether in custody or killed or however they want to do it. I always like that, or appreciate that they do that, because I can't handle an unfinished, like left there. That's creepy.
Yeah, that is really hard to accept that there is no closure. So Okay, what's your number two?
My number two I did was Echoes Among the Stones by Jamie Jo Wright. So it does like historical suspense type stories, like it's mystery. So it's a split time. So she has, there's a bad guy in the current day, and then there's a bad guy in the past one. And I think the reason that I picked this one was because it was the killer from the past. And in the present day, the old woman, Mumsy, is recalling these, you know, things. And it's just, there's like, Jamie Jo's pretty excellent at creating creep factor in her story. So she's got a pretty depraved mind. We're really close friends, so I can say that and still maintain friendship with her. Because she'll send me like little snippets as she's writing, and I'm like, oh, like I'll just, you know, shudder. But I think the thing with hers was I got so attached. She did a great job creating a memorable character. When you go back in time and you're reading the story as it's happening, you're connecting to the character, but you mm-hmm. know that character is going to die. And so, or that something happened to that character. And so yeah. you're so emotionally invested in it. So that when the actual, I think that story, when the actual crime was revealed and then the killer was revealed, it really like hit me in like my heart, because I was like, oh my goodness. And it's, I think also like her, that particular crime was something I had seen like similarities to and like crimes that had happened in that era. And so mm-hmm. you're just kind of like, you're shocked at like this actually happened or could have happened or took place. Cause she does like to pull stuff from what she reads in history, but so I think she does a really good job of doing that. So she created that the villain there, and it was, again, it was one of those ones where it was an unexpected but familiar, you know, it was a familiar person, but it was an unexpected thing. You didn't expect that crime to happen. And he puts in just enough details, like blood splatter on, like, you know, like think like there was a, it's like a little girl's room, or you know, you go into the girl's room and you're like, you're visualizing it. And I think that just heightens the like suspense of the creepiness in it.
Yeah. I know, she does that so well. I have not read that. I have two to do, but it was like when I was reading the Haunting of Bonaventure Circus. And then it was like, so I was reading that, and then she was posting pictures of how they were remodeling or reconstructing the old building, and I'm like just waiting for the announcement of what's going to be discovered behind the walls, because you feel so, she does it so well where it's like you feel like it's real. Yeah, you know, like
yeah
especially when she connects it to real places and real history.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's one of those things that you can have a story that has like a generic villain that, I mean, they're individual in the plot and in the author's mind, but generically that crime is across the board the same, where I think Jamie Jo has a real advantage in being able to like draw stuff from history and write it. And in, mm-hmm. she does it in such a way that she's so descriptive and haunting in her words. And she's just excellent. So her stories are always ones that I read and I have to have like a light on, like I have to be very mindful of how I read them. Hers don't horrify me as well. I don't know if that's the right word. I guess hers don't have that like shock factor that the Pawn and, you know, the Rook, like that has. This one has like the horribleness of her stories is the truth that they actually happened, you know, and that you're now in the mindset of a victim and you're going to be able to witness that. So that's always, she does a really good job with that.
She really does. And for some reason, it was like, I read my first one. For some reason, every year, I like crave her spooky, like a little bit of mystery right around Christmas. Why? It's in the middle of what's supposed to be all the cheer. And I love Christmas, but it's like, I always seem to want to read a Jamie Jo book around Christmas. And it's
it gives you that little like hint of heaviness to make you really appreciate the Christmas. Like, there, okay, thank goodness that's over.
Exactly. Oh, that's a good way to put it. I like that. Okay, so I was trying to go through which villains had an interesting kind of backstory that I wanted to share, because it's like usually I always remember the heroes and stuff like that. The villains don't always stand out to me as much, but I don't know if you have read it. It's a little bit older. I don't know when it was published. Early 2000s, but 2011 by Robin Parrish, Vigilante.
Oh, I haven't, but I like that cover. That's really nice.
Really cool cover. So whenever somebody says, oh, is there something with like a little bit more of a superhero vibe? Mm-hmm. I recommend this. So it's like your Vigilante, it's like Arrow kind of vibe.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of. And this one has an interesting, it's like one villain, and Vasco, I think his name was, Vasco. But so you have the one villain and you actually kind of, he's a bad guy, mm-hmm. but for whatever reason, you understand the reason behind why he's at odds with the hero in the story. And the hero is responsible for something that happened to him. So there's like a connection in the past.
And then
it builds up in the story. And then in the story, it kind of like talks about vigilante justice and stuff. But and it comes to the point that is like, if you're a vigilante and you're taking out all these lesser bad guys, then the bigger bad guys in the background rise to the forefront, and then there's no competition. So then it's like your super hero type thing with your super villain. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like that, exploring that type of story that they did.
I think like that's something, it's one of those things that I've had a discussion with my family, because we love like, you know, superhero type storylines. And but the whole idea of the antihero, where you have somebody who is doing bad things in a normal situation would be considered a bad guy, but because of some sort of justice that in their mind, maybe not, you know, outside of his mind, he feels like this is justified. And I said, it's so interesting because those kind of people, it's kind of like what you were talking about, like somebody who is dead set determined to like do a crime, like they're not gonna be swayed, because in their mind they are doing the right thing, you know, like they are going, you know, I think about, you know, with your children, you think like, okay, if anybody ever hurt my children, like they're gonna, like something, I will take them out, you know what I mean? And so that's kind of that thing, like if you hurt my family, like Mama Bear is gonna come out and it won't be pretty, and I'm willing to go to jail for it, just putting it out there. So, not a lot of things I would do, but I think somebody posed that question in like a readers group or an authors group, and they were saying like, what is one thing that you would like that you would commit a crime for, that you would go to jail for? And almost every answer was my children. Like I would go to jail for my child. And so it just goes to show you that everybody almost probably has a line, right? Of like, okay, I won't cross this line, but this would be the thing that would make me cross or consider crossing the line. So, you know, it's kind of like we all have a little badness that kind of, if we feed into it, can become worse, and then you create these characters.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what I've seen too, especially, I don't know if you've read later in the Stephen James series, they do explore behind that. It's like, you know, if you don't have anything restricting you, what's to stop you from doing that? And then you can explore that psychology of, we do need those restrictions, and there is something in us. Yeah, I know, it's like we discuss this because my mom and I do love watching the true crime and all that stuff, and sometimes, you know, we're discussing it and discussing how we think it would, how it ended up, or where the body is. And every once in a while I will say, well, that's what I would do, to get a reaction.
right
so yeah. Okay, so do you have another favorite?
I do. I have two more. One of them I got to read. It was a beta read, and it doesn't have a title yet. So I can't say the title of the story, but I can tell you who the author is, and it's Robin Patch. And she's got a book coming out sometime. I think late this year. But I got to endorse it, read it for endorsement. And she's got an excellent villain who uses nursery rhymes to so when the killer kills people, there's a nursery rhyme around it. I don't want to say very much more than that, but like, so that one I thought was really, because I think even in my endorsement I said I will never look at nursery rhymes again the same way, because now I will always be thinking of like, how would this affect a crime, like how could a crime happen with this nursery rhyme. So that was just a little sneak peek for her. So definitely mark that one down, be on the lookout for it. But the book that I would say that I read And when I read it, it was so shocking and appalling to me that I sent it. I gave it away to a friend and I said, don't ever send it back to me. You can keep it. I don't ever want that book in my house again. Was Ted Decker's Three.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. That one. So it's that one, if you've read it, you kind of know that the villain on that one is tricky. That's a psychological book. And I was not prepared for that book in any shape, way, or manner. The way that he wrote that story twisted, like, was so, the twist was so awful. Like, it was so shocking to me that, like, I could not, my daughter did, she has a very good analogy. My daughter watched The Sixth Sense for the first time, and she's 21, but she watched it, I think, when she was like 19. She'd never seen it before. So she's kind of the younger group that like just missed the, when it was the phenomenon. So she didn't know anything about the story, about the movie. So at the end, when the truth is revealed about it, she was so shaken by it. She had to get up and she was like running around the house, like unable to like get, you know, the grasp of like what had just happened to her, how they had just tricked her mind. And that's what I feel like with Ted Decker, is that that villain, that reality, when you learn who the villain is, was so surreal and so like, it messed with my head. So I literally sent out an email and I said, does anybody want this book? And my friend who lived across the country was like, I'll take it. And I'm like, go ahead, you keep it. You don't ever have to send it back. It is the book that haunts me to this day, that I'm it was haunting. It was terrifying. So
I remember reading that because it was like way back in the day, we would each get a book from the bookstore and I would take it and I would read it with my brother. When we were in our teens, we would do like a buddy read thing. We had to read at the same pace. Mm. And we read Monster by Frank Peretti. Mm. And then we read Three next. And I remember us discussing it. And it was like, yeah, that was just, and then we had it like all built up. And then the movie came out like a few years
later. I haven't seen the movie. I think I saw the preview. I think I saw that there was making a movie and I was like, oh no way.
And it was just like, and it was bad because we had discussed it so much and we had our mental images that it was like, I just don't know if it worked as good in a movie format, because after you're finished the book, you're thinking back to everything that you missed previously. And it was just like, yeah.
Right. And it's one of those books that like, yeah, it's like one of those things that you read and they're like, okay, well, it's kind of like, you know, you watch The Sixth Sense. Well, now, you know, like, you know what happens. So you know what, you know, now, you know, so it doesn't have that same, like, that thrill or whatever, but it was I think that one was written very well for the villain, because that was just it was just shocking. I think it's just shocking because that actually happens. Those type of villains exist in the world. They're the scariest ones, like you said.
Yeah, the ones that you do not see.
No,
so exactly. I was thinking of the ones that you do not see, because I am going to, so I was having a hard time deciding between two different books for my last one. One would be C.S. Lewis's Screwtape Letters, but I'm going to do the more modern one, Lord Fulgrin's Letters. So
I haven't read those. Oh, I love Randy Alcorn. He's so good.
He's so good. Like, this was like a really short one that my brother and I both read more recently. So Lord Fulgrin's Letters is like a contemporary, not an adaptation, but like a continuance that C.S. Lewis did with Screwtape Letters, which is, it's a epistolatory version from a demon's perspective to a lesser demon about the person that they're trying to tempt. So it's like really deep into that mindset of a real a real embodiment of a villain, fictional wise. Mm-hmm. But it really made me think of how the struggle against evil and how that can be manifested in the lighter things. And it just gave a really great perspective, I feel like, in just life. And I do love how it's like I love how Randy Alcorn writes really with a very strong eternal perspective. Mm-hmm. And I do love the little twist that he gives at the end. It's like not your normal twist mm-hmm. in a book, but it is filled with hope. So
yeah, well, you've given me like two books that I'm definitely gonna look into, because I haven't read that one or the other one, Robin Parrish, right, you said?
Yeah, Robin Parrish's Vigilante. So I know it's like I discovered it like 3 or 4 years ago, and I'm like, I wonder why I've never heard of this, because I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's what I love about like the book world, like book, like readers, is that there's so many books, right? There's just so many out there. We're never gonna get up to all of them, but if we talk about them, then we definitely can get to like where we're like, okay, oh, I'll write that one down, and then of course my book stack just keeps growing. So
I know it keeps on growing. I have a couple from you. So now, as a writer, just for a fun fact, and you have it having to get into the villain research, what is the most bizarre thing you have had to Google?
Bizarre. So I had to, what, in my first book, I had to Google decomposition for bodies, particularly in a swampy kind of setting, like what would happen to the body, like how long could a body last in that kind of a situation. So that was kind of gross. And I try to think, like, I try not to be too graphic with my stories with the death. I got probably pretty graphic with my first one. And then my editor was like, we might want to tone down the like description of the body. But I was like, oh, but it's so good. I did all this research. I know what the body's supposed to look like. And so, you know, they said imaginations sometimes are worse than, you know, descriptions. So probably body decomposition for that particular story. And then I got to kill off one of my characters in the second book in a really unique way. And so that was, mm-hmm. that was really interesting to be able to go in and learn about how that type of death can happen. And so that was fun. That kind of stuff is fun when I can think of unique ways to like kill off somebody that would make it different. Killing off a character in a unique way is a heck of a lot easier than putting my heroine in like dangerous situations, because those always seem to be the same thing. Like it's always the same stuff that's happening, but killing off people seems to be pretty easy. Gosh, that sounds terrible.
And that was a really unique thing. I was watching it as the second one happened, and it's like, okay, how was this? How did it come to be? Because you don't know right away. Right. And it's like, and I guess because I've read so much suspense and watched so many videos, you start to feel like you can guess. Yeah, and that one was like, yeah. And it was like, are you right? One thing that I think is really fun too, like when we're, I want to just say like a quick other thing about the killer's perspective is, I don't know if you watched Columbo.
Every once in a while I'll catch it on MeTV.
And it was like, I always thought that was kind of unique, because you see exactly what the killer does. And there mm-hmm. aren't a lot of shows that you see everything that the killer does. But the clue, the twist is, how are they going to do it? Because you see them covering their tracks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it's like, to see, it's like, okay, how are they going to catch them? I do think that that's a fun thing to see it through. Interesting thing.
Yeah. Because I mean, at this, you know, a lot of killers are not very smart, but there are some that are quite brilliant. And if they could just mm-hmm. harness that brilliance into something like productive and beneficial to people instead of killing them, what a world we would have, right? So there are very smart and intelligent people. And I think so many of them get away with stuff or really believe they get away. Like there's just a level of like arrogance there that you're like, wow, wow.
I know. Yeah, that is it's a fascinating thing. So do you want to talk about your new series that's coming out this year? The first one's coming out this year.
Yes, sure. Yeah, I have a new series coming out. It is called Lights Out, and it's part of the Strategic Neutralization and Protection Agency, the SNAP agency. And I'm super excited about this. It's kind of like, I want to say it's kind of like the... like I would say like Marvel kind of meets like Blue Bloods kind of meets like DC. So they're it's a team that's it's a private agency that is in DC, and they are hired by the government or private entities to basically sort out problems and stop them before they happen. So kind of before America or any Americans know what's happening, they squash it. So I have an FBI, not an FBI, sorry, CIA officer who invites several members from foreign intelligence agencies into the United States to do a cooperation program to stop terrorism. And one of them goes missing. And so she, because it's a pretty big deal to have a foreign spy missing in America, the SNAP agency has to get involved. And it just so happens that my CIA officer Bryn Taylor is forced to work with the man she betrayed 10 years previously when they were in CIA training together. So that's Jack Hudson, and he's now one of the team members for SNAP. So they have to basically hunt down the potential terrorist. And as they're doing that, they're gathering more clues that there might be more behind this disappearance. And it's actually global. So the story doesn't take place in Egypt, but the missing spy is from Egypt. So there's parts of that are globally connected, and I like it. And so this story, you will have the perspective of the, the perspective of the villain, actually. Now that I think of it, you won't have the perspective of the villain in this story, except maybe at the very end. But really it's a perspective of different parts of where the villain has touched areas in the story. So, but I'm excited. So that one's coming out November 2nd. I think it's gonna be really fun. It was fun to write, and I love the team dynamic, and I think it'll be a lot of
I love hearing that there's something like a private agency. Like, I guess you get to color a little bit outside the lines of regular law enforcement.
Yes.
Stories and procedures and everything, right?
Yeah, for sure. So this one, because it's a private entity, it gets funded differently. So if, you know, the FBI needs extra help, they can fund it differently to get extra help, or the CIA can hire them. It's kind of like, I think it was Blackwater. There was an organization in the United States called Blackwater. It's no longer under the name Blackwater. It's under a different name now, but they're basically a team or an agency that has former special forces members, former black ops people who go in and like do these types of extractions or negotiations. And so it's kind of similar to that. And in fact, I think I actually do a little shout out to that, to that group in the story. But they don't have the rules and regulations that a typical government agency would have. So they have a little bit more freedom to do what they need to do, which also can lead to problems like in other agencies that are similar to them, because they do have to answer to somebody when things go wrong, and things do go wrong. So,
Especially high stakes.
To be able to play around with that, to be able to say like, oh, you can do this, but because the CIA, does not have jurisdiction within the, boundaries of the United States. They're primarily an intelligence agency that deals outside of that. So the FBI would be involved, but because this is the CIA and because it's a spy and we brought him in, so now we have to bring in outside help.
And that's going to be like really interesting, because I love it when it goes kind of like international, and you got to think of like, you know, it's like there's a handful of books that I've read that have like Mossad involved, mm-hmm. and you know, the different countries that have their own intelligence agencies and everything. Yeah. So it, yeah, that'll be that.
Yeah, and I think that was fun. We lived in Egypt for a couple of years, so I was able to kind of draw on like the information that I had from that when we lived there. So I don't think a lot of people realize like every country, for the most part, will have some sort of an intelligence, you know, mm-hmm. organization, because that's just how they protect themselves, the same as us protecting ourselves here. So it's fun when they get to interact. So.
Oh no, that sounds like a blast. Yeah.
It'll be fun. I'm excited about it.
Yeah. And do you have like a 3-book series again?
Yeah. So it'll be a 3-book series. I'm working on book number 2 right now, which will be in another one of the team members' perspectives. And it's been such a pain to write. Speaking of villains, on this particular story, I wanted to do the villain's perspective in the first chapter. And I wrote it and just, I was so stuck. I got 30,000 words into the story and I was like, oh, there's something going on. I can't figure out this story. I don't know what's going on. I don't have a plot. And so I figured the plot part out for the most part. And then I was like, all right, I need to go back to that first chapter and figure that out. And then it was about like the 3rd or 4th time going through it with edits that I realized this is in the wrong villain's perspective. So mm-hmm. I had to like switch my mindset and figure out like, okay, this is the wrong antagonist, because there's multiple antagonists in this movie, in the second book. So multiple bad guys. And so I had to switch over the antagonist. And once I did that, it all fell into pieces. I'm like, okay, good. I got this one. And I think the best part about writing these particular stories is that like I can pull a lot from like what's happening in the news. So like I can pull from, you know, things that I'm watching and like, okay, this is how this bad guy would be, or this is who this bad guy would be. And so, so it's fun because it's dealing with like the, you know, deals with the government and security and our nation. So that has been really fun to write those kind of villains. Those ones come a little bit easier because they're pretty much one-minded in wanting to take out the U.S. So that's always easy.
Hey, like I remember binging so many seasons of 24 when I was able to rent them from the library and just like watch. We were going to see if I could watch a whole season of 24 in 24 hours. Like I love those high stakes against the whole country or the region or whatever. Yeah, those are.
Yeah, I think a lot of, you know, when I create my villains, I think I wrote my very first manuscript and I was able to create a villain. We were living in Egypt at the time and during the Arab Spring. So I was able to definitely create villains. And I think that was probably one of my favorite villains that I had ever written. And I had gotten feedback from several critique partners that were like, this villain is so evil, like just so evil. Like, how are you, like, I hate him already. And I'm like, that's good. That's a good thing. Yeah. And then that manuscript never will see the light of day. So he's just going to go down in infamy. the villain that could have been.
That was so bad he couldn't come out.
I know. He was so bad.
Oh, yeah. No, that's, I don't know. There's something about it. And when I was talking with my brother, it's like what makes really good good bad guys. And it's like he's always the one, whenever I'm like complaining that it might be a little bit too dark, my brother always says, it's like, well, you always have then the contrast between your hero. So it's like your hero can be so, sometimes how bad the hero can, or the villain can be, is the contrast, and the hero shines that much brighter. So
right yeah, for sure. I do. Very good way. And I think it's even, I think I've read a couple and I couldn't tell you offhand what they are, but I like it when I see the hero story sort of running parallel to the bad guy. Cause then you're like, okay, this just goes to show you, like you were saying, like how close somebody could come to making that, you know, making a choice that can put them in the other person's perspective. Like, would I do that? Could I do that? You know?
I mean, yeah, it's like, I have a feeling, you know, I like, you know, I talk a lot of smack for somebody who's probably like not up to the task, but you know, it's like, you never know what the tipping point could be. I mean, real life shows that. So.
Right. For sure. Yeah. Just
show it in perspective. Well, thank you very much for joining me. This has been really fun.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun. I can talk villains and books all day long. And I love when I can brainstorm a bad guy. It's the best part.
It's
almost like you can be as outlandish as you want to be. And then you would eventually hone them in, but you could just be like, and then what if he did this? And then what if he did that? And what if he did this? But you know, for like your hero and your heroine, you have to kind of be like very like by the book for them, but your villains, you can go wild with. So
that is true. It's the whole other perspective. They do not have to follow the rules that the hero and the
heroine. They really don't. Right, right. So that's the fun part.
Well, I am really looking forward to your series. Can't wait for, I can't believe it's like November. I saw that cover, gorgeous cover. And it's like.
They did such a good job. I know, it's going to be so far away.
But it won't. I mean, we're in February now. Yeah. So like.
For the last week of February and it'll go by fast.
Oh, okay. So where can readers and the listeners here to this podcast find you and keep track? Tabs with you.
Well, the best way to find out information about what's going on, what's happening, is through my newsletter, which they can subscribe to on at my website, www.nataliewalterswriter.com, or you can follow me on social media. I'm on Instagram and I'm on Facebook, and I'm always posting on those platforms pretty consistently, pretty regularly, and that's really the best way to connect, which I love connecting with readers. So you know, I love being able to interact with readers and I love having chats with them. So I'll do lives every once in a while and post those on there. So those are the best ways to get all the information about when books are releasing, giveaways and good stuff.
Awesome. Thank you. Definitely going to keep track of this.
Yes. Thanks so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
My pleasure. It's like, I now need to discover more villains and can't wait for your more villains.
Yes.
And then multiple villains. Oh my goodness. All that's going to be like, yeah, really.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, that's all the time that we have for today. Thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to bringing you a new episode next week. Bye.